Well, good morning. We are starting on day two of the Mindvention here in Las Vegas, and we are at the Palace Station Casino and having breakfast, and I thought, well, I'll come over and interrupt somebody in the middle of their breakfast. So, and also let you guys listen to someone who's only going to be here for 2 hours, so it's either now or never. Chris Carter, how are you doing there, Chris?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks a lot.
And it's really wonderful to see you. I haven't seen you since Chicago. It's been a couple of years ago, I guess, in the last show. Have you got anything else new that's coming up in Chicago you're doing currently?
No, I'm on the road all the time now. And have been, and I think I would love to go back and get a home theater in Chicago.
Yeah,
but there's a lot more money on the road.
Now, when you're saying on the road, that I assume these are like corporate events and things you're doing.
Corporate college campuses,
in college, even college shows. But you were doing college shows before.
Yeah, I've been doing college shows for 20 years.
Yeah, okay. I know that some guys have given that up and kind of move on. Another thing, I remember that Denny and Lee had decided, oh, I'm going to open a magic shop, you know.
Right, yeah.
Banachek, so I'm going to try his thing with Chris somebody.
Seemed to have worked out.
Seems to have worked out okay. Yeah, so is this like a grand plan or a launch pad? Are you thinking of something?
No, it really isn't. I mean, in terms of that field, I guess you could describe me as a lifer. It's all I ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
Although it's not all I do. I do corporate events too, but I'm also a speaker, youth speaker on the college campus field. So I don't only do shows. I also do a program that teaches them leadership skills and nonverbal communication skills.
Interesting. And so is this something that they bring you in to do and do the show as well?
Yeah, very frequently. In fact, that's what I'm going on to do tomorrow up in Oregon, on Southern Oregon University. I do my seminar in the daytime, and then the evening show is part of a performing arts series in the nighttime.
So when you say a seminar, so it's not just like a one-hour speech and you're in and out. You're actually...
Well, sometimes it is a one-hour speech in and out. In this case, it's a little bit longer. It's a leadership program, and it'll be a couple hours long.
In that case, what do you have, like 30, 40 students or something?
Now, for this, because it's part of... They're bringing a number of campus groups together for some leadership training. We'll probably have 300 or 400.
Okay. And so it's not a workshop, per se, where they break split up into small groups.
Right. This one, they're not going to be splitting up into small groups, but it is still hands-on.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the show, then, you're doing, tell me about some of the effects and what is it that you're doing. Well, you don't have to be specific. You know, what kind of... What is your show about? I mean, does it include magic and mentalism? The reason I'm asking is...
No, my show is exclusively a mentalism show.
Okay.
And it's actually very similar to the one that I did at Mindvention in 2009, although it's longer. It's more expanded. It's about a 90-minute show, and its centerpiece is the Question-Answer Act, which has been my staple forever.
Yeah.
And it features a lot of things that are, you know, my original routines or my touches on classics.
And the reason I was asking is because yesterday afternoon's panel discussion was talking about magic versus mentalism, or not versus, but rather should magic be included in mentalism shows and vice versa, and how much, what percentage, if any. What's your thought on that?
Well, my thought really is that it is up to the performers. The one thing I've learned, if I've learned anything, is that anytime I think that there's a rule about how something should be done, somebody's going to come along and prove me that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And I think it has to be considered in context of what you do. In my world, there are so many magicians/mentalists now, or magicians doing mental magic, that at one time I did more magic in conjunction with it, but now I don't.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've eliminated all psychokinetic effects from my show because those, I feel, in the context of my performing environment, create the impression that you're a magician. I don't think they play as what I might call real mentalism anymore.
Because that's not your power. So
right, yeah, exactly. And so I define what I do in two ways. I read people and I influence people, and everything revolves around those.
Yeah.
And that allows me to differentiate myself from the enormous mass of young guys who are coming out doing sort of illusion/magician/whatever. And it's really just a branding issue. It's not so much an artistic issue, although I think it has artistic components. For me, it's primarily a branding issue.
Mm-hmm. So that way that they recognize and want you over somebody else, because we want that mentalism guy rather than the guy that he does fun stuff.
You're right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I do fun stuff too, but I do a more focused kind of fun stuff.
Focused, yeah, that kind of thing. But just for some people who may not know this about you, being an excellent magician and creator of things such as the Anniversary Waltz was something that was Chris Carter's original idea. How did you come up with that, by the way?
Well, It is related to things that had been around. There were a number of effects that one was published in a Peter Samuelson book, and it was a signature transposition effect. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be more clear if two cards could fuse
back
together.
Back, yeah.
And so that both would be signed elements. And so I wanted to work out a more clear effect. Around that same time, there was a thing called cold fusion. These guys had apparently created sort of a cold chemical version of nuclear fusion.
Yeah.
And that was all the news. And so I thought, well, that would be a nice theme around which to build
right.
this. I didn't keep that theme for very long. I ended up moving it to more of a relationship theme, which then Doc Eason picked up on and just went to town with.
Right, right. Were you a restaurant magician? Or
yes.
What were you doing?
Yeah, I was in graduate school, and I was working restaurants in the weekend.
In Chicago?
No, in University of Michigan.
Oh, okay. And then how did you get into mentalism? What was it that kind of flipped your switch there?
I've been in mentalism since I was a kid, but not exclusively that. And
yeah.
When I moved to Chicago, I thought I was going to become a professional close-up magician, and I decided that I really liked the stage more.
Yeah.
I liked being in front of people, and I knew that I was never going to be a whack-a-whack-a comedy magician. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
So I decided to emphasize the mentalism, and it started out with magic/mentalism, and then I just began to develop a reputation only for the mentalism, and I thought, well, this is the right way for me to go.
One of the things that people talk about also with mentalists that's most important, I believe, is scripting. And a question often comes up, and will right now, how much of your show is actually scripted? How much of it would you say is, I know, like Q&A, it's got a little bit of jazz magic in
right.
a way, but...
Well, I would say that, in essence, all of my show is scripted. There certainly are improvisational elements, especially within the Q&A. I didn't write the script, per se.
Mm-hmm.
I evolved the script.
Right.
But, I could do beat for beat, word for word, in my sleep, and unfortunately sometimes do.
Yeah.
Sometimes I dream my way through the show. And I think that you have to do that in order to move away from the script. Once you can do the script without thinking,
right.
Then you have freedom to improvise and always return to a core that you know is solid.
Right.
So to me, that's the importance of scripting. But I don't write a script. It's not a literary thing. It's a spoken thing. And so I evolve the script. I improvise it. I take notes on my improvisations.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I want to hone certain words, then I will start to write. But there doesn't exist some written form of it. It's scripted, but it's in my head.
Gotcha. Okay. It's kind of like, I guess, a language, you know, that when a language becomes second nature to you, you start thinking and dreaming in that language.
Right. I think that's exactly correct. And I think that it's easier to improvise when you know you can go back to a solid foundation at any time you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, any ideas, tips, or suggestions you'd have for young people who are getting involved? Well, I say young people, perhaps. Well, that'd be another question. That do you think that a young person, let's say under 20,
right.
could present himself as a mentalist?
Thank you. Oh, I'm giving it to you.
We got you right.
Got breakfast. Okay. Well, we'll wrap up here real quickly.
No, I'll put that up.
Yeah.
The
what do you think about the
idea of a young person under 20 presenting themselves as a mentalist?
Yeah.
I think that it certainly can be done. I think it's probably more difficult for them to have credibility for an older audience,
right.
but I think it's really important for them to define the how it is that they can do the
yeah.
things that they claim to do.
Yeah.
You know, do they have a special gift? Well, young people can certainly have a special gift.
Sure.
Have they studied human behavior for decades? Well, then they're not going to have as much credibility.
Right.
So I think it's, you know, they have to just figure
That's
out how
a good point.
It is they come to what they do.
If they were, like, part of the X-Men group, you
right,
know,
exactly.
or something, you know.
So right, some young prodigy or,
right.
you know, just have a special power.
Right.
And, you know, it's not that common for mentalism to be presented as special powers anymore as opposed to psychological insight, but there's certainly nothing wrong with it from a theatrical
yeah.
perspective.
Yeah.
And a young person can definitely get away. But I'm not certain, even still, that older audiences will give them the level of credibility that they want. So, but they can certainly and do perform for young people.
Yeah. Well, that was my next question, was about how young do you think that a person would be before they can cognitively appreciate a mind reading act? You think it's like 18 or so?
No, I think it's much younger than that.
Yeah. Okay.
I think maybe 10 or 11 or 12 even.
Wow, okay.
I think absolutely. I don't think that that's a difficult cognitive leap at that stage at all. And the reason I come to that conclusion is when I do performing arts centers. we very often have people that age in
around
the crowd,
that age,
and they certainly seem to be getting into it.
And they stick with it the whole time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
No, there's no younger than that. There's definitely a possibility of their attention wavering.
Yeah.
But that 9, 10, 11, 12, maybe 9 might be a little young, but I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. When you get to a certain age, it's hard to know how young those people are.
Well, you're working in the college circuit then right now, of course, that I would think that would just be an ideal age in which you're kind of on the line of being skeptics and believers.
Absolutely.
You know, and so do you use a disclaimer or anything, you know, try and say, well, I, or not?
No, I use a claimer.
I like that. Okay.
I try to define what I do for people in such a way that whatever their biases and preconceptions are, they're confirmed.
Yeah.
I say some of what I will do involves my background as an illusionist. Some of what I do involves my skill in nonverbal communication and people reading. Some of what I do involves my skills in hypnosis.
Yeah.
And we're going to have fun.
Going to combine all those things and have fun for this evening then. Yeah. Well, right now I'm going to let you have fun and enjoy breakfast before it starts to get cold over here, too.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chris Carter. One quick thing. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. I've talked to so many people, and I always ask them as I wrap up, what is your magic word? It wouldn't have to be like, you know, abracadabra, whatever. What is you live by? What is your philosophy of life? You know, maybe. What's important to you? What is your magic word?
My magic word would be two words: take chances.
Ooh, I like that. Like that very much. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
So, for The Magic Word, Scotty out. Well, we are still on the second day of the convention, and I've got with me Eric Citron from New York State. Actually, from New York, or are you from New Jersey?
Both.
From both. You're just kind of from the new states out
that
way.
That's right. Whatever's new.
Okay. And you are going to be the organizer of another mentalism or mind-reading convention this next year. And can you tell us a little bit about what you've got planned there?
Sure. It's called the East Coast Mind Jam. It's March 28th to the 30th. It takes place in Somerset, New Jersey, which is about an hour out of Manhattan. And basically what I wanted to do, Tony Spiener, who's a former president of Tannen's Magic, is a good friend of mine, and he's very ill, and he lives in a nursing home. And I wanted to do something to pay tribute in a lifetime of magic. So I got together some of the best mentalists in the world, and they're all coming together for a magical weekend. We have Banachek, Richard Osterlin, Devin Knight, Doc Hilford, Ted Karmelovich, and Mark Salem, and Scott Wells to start. And we hope that it's going to be a magical event. And on Saturday night, I'm going to be giving Tony Spiener a Lifetime in Magic Award. And we're going to have some video testimonials. And we hope it's going to be a great tribute to a great man who really was a selfless individual when it came to giving people their starts in magic.
Yeah, there are so many people who have gone on to be professionals, like David Copperfield, someone at the top of his field, who started his humble beginnings at Tannen's with working, I guess. Didn't he work at Tannen's?
No, he didn't work at Tannen's. He started going in when he was 14 years old, but Tony gave him his first professional job when he was 18.
Oh, okay.
And kind of launched his career, and he's done pretty well for himself.
He's done okay, yeah. Mr. Kodkin, yeah.
That's right.
And so this particular convention is taking the place of one that was scheduled for a few years ago. That was because Tony used to run the Jamboree, was there?
Jubilee.
Jubilee, go ahead.
Yeah, we were going to do the August of 2012. Tony and I were going to bring back the Jubilee. Tony did 40 Magic Jubilees from the 60s. And in the Catskills. And we had a fantastic lineup of talent. David Copperfield was involved, Topaz, Sean Farquhar, all of these guys. And then Tony got very ill, and he basically went into a diabetic coma for almost 12 months. And I had to cancel it. And I felt bad, and it's something that he wanted to do. So this is my way of paying tribute to Tony. I know him since I'm 12 years old. And he's a great man, and I'm hoping that we get a lot of people to come and enjoy some fantastic mentalism. I mean, this is the who's who of mentalism, but also to say thank you and just to say we appreciate what you did.
So it really does serve a dual purpose in the standpoint that if you're not a mind reader, but you remember Tony and that you want to pay tribute to him, this may be a last chance that you get really to see him in the special honor. And if you don't remember Tony, but you are a mind reader and would like to know more about that and can't get out here to Vegas to the Mindvention, that you might want to go to this convention.
Yeah, it's eastcoastmindjam.com. It's something that's a labor of love on my part. And I'm very grateful to the talent that's coming on board, and they're paying a tribute to Tony. They're all friends of Tony. They've all known Tony for years. And it's been very well received. I'm out here at Mindvention. It's my second time here. This is a great group of people here, and the convention has been embraced by a lot of the talent that's here because of Tony. And I hope that everybody comes out and just says hello to him.
And whenever that they sign up, they need to do that before January 1st because price is going to be going up. It's $175 now.
Yes, it's $175 till January 1st, and then it goes up to $225 after January 1st. As I said, it's in Somerset, New Jersey. It's a very easy ride from Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. It's an hour from Manhattan. You can fly into Newark Airport. It's very easy. And we're hoping for a great event.
And again, it's going to be just a one-time only. So if you're just thinking about coming, you don't want to later find out, oh, you should have been there, because it's not going to happen again.
Absolutely. This is my tribute to Tony. God willing, he'll be around longer, but I'm not taking any chances. I am bringing him from the nursing home to the event for the evening. And, you know, hopefully that it's not a broken wand ceremony. It is a celebration.
Right. And that's why that we want to talk a little bit about this convention then right now in the middle of Mindvention, because this is really not a convention that's going to be competing with it. In fact, that both Danny Archer and Robert Allen are promoting the event as well and saying that this is going to be a great opportunity to honor Tony and bring in some mentalists perhaps to understand what a mentalism convention is like up in the Northeast. And it might encourage people to come to the Mindvention in the future, too.
Absolutely. Like I said, this is my second time at Mindvention. It's the who's who of mentalism and mind reading, and it's exciting. It's well organized. I'm hoping that our convention that I put on is just anywhere near as good as this, and I hope everybody has a great experience. And like I said, I hope that everybody comes out and not only to learn something and experience great entertainers, but also to say thank you to a great man who was very selfless in his love of magic.
That sounds great. Eric, thanks very much. That was Eric Citron. And for the magic word, Scotty out. And the convention still goes on. We just stepped outside the dealer room, and I wanted to talk with Stan Allen, who happened to stop by. Of course, this is his hood. And hey, Stan, how are you?
Great, thanks.
And so after the Magic Live, and you've kind of had a chance to breathe, and now a few months have passed since then.
You mean I've gotten out of my fetal position?
So to speak. That's right. Your head has come out of that shell a little bit, I guess. And you have requested feedback. Have you gotten a lot of good feedback from the
email? We got a lot of good feedback. We just ran a survey with our customers, and we've never surveyed before. We've always just asked for them to send us three things they liked and three things they thought we could do a lot better.
Yeah.
And they're very prolific, our customers. We would get 70, 80,000 words of content back.
Just on those questions.
Just on those questions, absolutely. But after the last one, what we came away with was, for every point somebody said, well, this was terrible, then there was somebody who said, oh, that was great.
Interesting.
So a lot of
point and counterpoint, yeah.
You know, a lot of it, we've been doing it a while, a lot of it we know, but every now and then someone will say, have you ever thought of... And we'll all sit around and look at each other and say, darn, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's what you're ultimately trying to get, or some additional ideas, just of what people want.
Sure. I'd like to feel with the audience, what was the experience? And, you know, people seem to enjoy the convention. We're not exactly sure why. Mm-hmm. We think we know, but, you know, we don't know. We're students. Our team is really student.
Well, what I like about it also is that you're always reinventing this, and you're trying to do something that's new and innovative and not necessarily trying to top the last one or improve on the other one. The last one is kind of like each one is a brand new and totally, completely different convention.
That's the ideal. Somebody told me one time, he said, we come to Magic Live to watch you walk on the wire. So, you know, we like to walk on the wire, and I don't know whether that means it's just as entertaining if I make it, or if I fall.
Yeah, yeah. But people want to watch.
People want to watch.
They like to watch
a
car wreck.
I guess. But no, I like to take chances. It's not fun doing the same thing over and over. What fun is that?
No, it wouldn't be.
That's a job.
Kind of old. That's right. Well, I know that as the convention closed, that you had made some comment then about the there possibly being another one in 3 years. Usually, it's been every other year. Of course, each time you say this is the last one, but
actually,
what are you thinking?
We've gone through. We were 3 years apart for a while, and then we sort of dropped into a 2 year cycle. But it's not so much a cycle, it's how we fit in with what else is going on in the world, and what else is going on with me and the team and everything else. So,
FISM is in 15.
Well, there's the combined IBM SAM in 2014,
right.
I'm just not sure people think Magic Live is, I'm hoping, is something special. And if you have it every single year, is it still special? I don't know. So we're looking down the road a few years on this one.
Okay. And try something else completely different, walk on the wire again.
you know, yeah.
So
people don't like, I mean, my team, they're exhausted and burned out by the end of it, but then they're saying, all right, now next year, what do we do? You know, so,
yeah.
That's all part
it's nice
of it.
To have a great team, yeah. Roy Johnson and Christy and everybody else.
Yeah, it's a lot of family, both by blood and other.
Yeah, you know, extended family.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah.
So if people have ideas, suggestions, or whatever, they should send an email
to
we
should. We get lots of
editor
of suggestions.
At magicmagazine.com.
Editor at Magic Magazine. And whether you've been to one or not, what would you like to see at a Magic convention?
Yeah. What would entice you to come out and attend? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it should be fun.
Good. Sam, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
That was Stan Allen from the convention floor at Mindvention. Scotty out. And so at the Mindvention, still day two, and we had a little bit of a surprise today because one of the performers was unable to make it, and in his stead, one of them was Chad Long, and I've got him here with me. Hey, Chad, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Scott.
And so when were you called upon? How did you find out you were going to be coming?
Last night, Danny Archer came to us and said, you know, could you do a few minutes? I said, well, I'm not really a mentalist, so to speak. You know,
right.
So I don't know how to go over, but I had a blast. It was a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, you know, when he asked you, that was what was going through your mind, since you are not a mentalist. You don't consider yourself a mentalist.
No, I play one on TV, but no, I don't. I do a lot of mentalism. I've always been into it. I've been into it, but I wouldn't say I'm a proper mentalist,
right.
You know. Certainly not, you know.
Yeah, like I think you'd be more of a comedian and a coin guy and a card guy.
Yeah, and I do mentalism and corporate stuff, but it's not like I would. Yeah, I don't go as a mentalist like, you know, like Michael or, you know, you know, or John Riggs and those guys, you know.
But you do study them, and you have some stuff that you add to your show?
Oh, sure, yeah. I do. I enjoy mentalism. You know, I've been interested in it since I was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
You know, starting off with all the classic books. I had 13 Steps when I was a teenager and all those. One guy said, "Man, what's a comedy magician doing at this show?" I said, "I have practical mental effects. I'm allowed to be here, man." So,
well, you know, that was one of the questions yesterday on the panel discussion that Paul Draper was hosting. It had to do with magic and mentalism specifically. Can you do mentalism in a magic show and vice versa? And I think that seemed to be kind of split, about half and half. And so your thought is obviously you can do both.
I've always felt that way, you know. I mean, and I'm certainly not the, you know, I know a lot of people disagree with that, but including my friends, you know. But I think it just has to do with your motivation, you know. How you're presenting yourself. Are you saying that you're a mentalist? If you're not, which, you know, nobody could come away from watching me perform and say, God, he was a serious mentalist, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think they would be able to distinguish my mentalism. They wouldn't be able to distinguish my mentalism from probably the magic, you know. I mean, because it's just all kind of is all comedy and all audience interaction. You know, I mean, I don't play it straight, so to speak. You know?
Do you use the comedy then to off-put them, or not off-put them, but just to kind of misdirect them a little bit away from the method and from the magic, because they've been having a lot of fun, then suddenly it's going to say, well, wait a minute.
It does help, you know. You kind of lead them down the garden path with in comedy. But I mean, I don't intentionally put comedy in for any other reason except that it's in everything I do. It's, you know, it's how I act when I'm not performing, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's important to be true to yourself. I mean, otherwise you're performing as out of character.
Sure.
You wouldn't be comfortable.
Sure. And I see the point of a lot of mentalists, and this is true, Scott, I think that they're less concerned with mixing magic and mentalism and more about, you know, when they go to do a show as a straight mentalist, you know, and they go, oh, I was at the 50th anniversary party the other day, and the guy was reading our minds, too, you know. He did, like, this thing with the cups, and then he guessed words. It makes it look like, I think, that anybody can do it, and I see their point, you know.
Yeah.
So I take it more serious than that, you know, and I treat it with respect, and you know, but I also do it in a comedic fashion, you know. I don't think I'm stepping on any toes when I do magic and mentalism together, you know. But I think that's what they're really worried about, is that when you know, they don't want to see, like, a birthday guy did it, you know, at a banquet somewhere, you know. Did paper balls over the head and then did a book test, you know what I mean? But
that's what I was going to ask. What type of things then would you include?
I do that kind of stuff. I did one of them in the show, you know. I did the book test that I do, you know. I do Magic Square. I do some pre-show stuff, you know, with the birthdays and different things. I do lots of different fun stuff, you know. I mean, maybe eventually I'll do a lot more mentalism.
Would you say about 15-20% of your show would be mentalism?
Yeah, definitely. And it's usually the end of it. And that's the funny thing. You can do magic all night, you know, for 30 minutes and then do 15 minutes of mentalism, and then they come up to you later, which might also be an issue with the whole thing, and say, you know what, now we get that you can do the tricks, you know what I mean, but boy, how did you, you know,
precisely.
When they don't understand it's the same methods half the time, you know, there's a lot of saying it's still magic, you know, but they don't know that, it's unbelievable, same methods, but now you're getting words and thoughts,
right,
and it looks
but it's presented
different.
In a completely different way,
presented completely different
well, you
way.
And I are just 100% in alignment with that, because I'm the same way, that I like to have people engaged and laughing and having a good time, and they're enjoying the magic. It's kind of like Michael Lamar would say, bubblegum for the eyes, it's like,
sure.
This is really great, and then I weave in some mentalism, and
and they go, and they're all laughing, they're still smiling, they go, oh, huh? Wait
exactly.
a minute.
Exactly. And you know what? If they leave happy and they leave astounded and they like you, you've done your job.
You get a little bit of everything for everybody.
I think so, you know.
Well, the argument then yesterday was that if you're doing a little bit of for everybody, then you don't know who you are and you haven't established a character. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but they're saying that it is confusing. And I'm saying, no, it's variety. I think when people today have short attention spans, they're used to reality shows and, you know, looking at different things and multitasking and texting while they're talking on the phone and whatever else. And so I think that this is fine because you're able to, you know, not necessarily focus on just one thing and being a mentalist or being a magician, but doing a little bit of
I think that argument's flawed, too, because, I mean, if you're doing a show that has lots of, you know, fun, great magic
right.
in it, it's,
right.
it will be for everybody. Who
sure.
doesn't like great magic and great mentalism?
Right.
I mean, to say that it's, you know, you don't know who you are, I'm just doing stuff that I like and that I know people will like.
Right.
I'm not trying to, you know, to focus on one group, you know, or demographic, really.
And isn't that ultimately what we want is somebody to say, I want Chad Long. I don't want just that magician or that mentalist, or I want Scott Wells. I want that guy.
Yeah,
because
I
like
his
personality,
you know,
his character.
Sure, yeah. And you can't, nobody can, I mean, they can try to copy it, but nobody can be you. That's
right.
a great thing, yeah. But, yeah, I think that's...
So that's the advice you'd kind of give other people, I guess, as well, is just to say, be yourself and to...
Yeah, and maybe exaggerate a little bit, you know? I mean, you see, I don't know, were you in the show earlier today?
I wasn't, actually.
Okay,
I was podcasting with somebody else.
Yeah, and my style is kind of a nervous... But I am a nervous type of person anyway, you know?
I've seen you perform many times.
Yeah, and you know, it goes over, you know? And so I always tell people, you know, how do you be funny? I'm like... Just be yourself. You don't have to try. You know what I mean? As long as you're be yourself and then maybe exaggerate it, like, you know, just a little bit, turn the knob up to 11. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just be yourself, but, you know, on steroids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's still you, but just it's a little exaggerated. That's what I like to do.
Now, how'd you find that character? Did you go to, like, an improv school
I didn't.
Or something?
I was nervous. I was performing one night. I was just nervous as hell. And, you know,
you
and they were like, my God, that was funny. The way you act all nervous. I was like, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you decided to keep that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just go with what I have, you know, and because otherwise, I'll be more nervous trying to be something else, you know, and
yeah.
So, but I play it up. I play that whole, you know, paranoid, you know, nervous thing. But it's kind of like how I am, really, you know. So,
there was a thread on Facebook that someone's posting the other day recently about being nervous on stage and how do you get rid of nerves and whatever. And are you nervous when you first come on before every show?
Pretty good. I was here. I mean, only because I just figured it was really easy and they were fun, you know.
Yeah.
And so they're so forgiving. So, and it went great. But sometimes they am, you know, not really, not as much anymore. But Jeff Hobson, I saw a lecture by him, and he said the way to get rid of all nerves is just be ready. Just be know your stuff, you know. And he's right. You know, if you're prepared and you know your material, you know, then, yeah. If you don't know, I'd be scared. He said I'd be scared to death, too, if I was going out there and do stuff I hadn't practiced, you know. He said, but he goes, I'm not nervous at all anymore because I know the stuff like the back of my hand. I know they're going to like it, mostly, usually. And that's right. So, yeah, that helps get rid of your nerves. Know your stuff and practice. You know?
I think it's important.
Live shows as you possibly can. That's what I tell young magicians who just
get out
practice in their bedroom and then they go out and it doesn't work, you know. You got to find a place to be bad. This is, you know, this is old advice. You know, it's classic advice, but I know it's true. You stroll for free. If you're young, you know, you're paid for it anyway. Stroll for free everywhere you can. Do magic on stage. Go to old folks' homes. I mean, anywhere. And screw up for you know a year, you know, and you'll get really good, you know.
Locally in Houston, Scott Hollingsworth just recently had given a little mini lecture for our club, and one of the things he said was the very thing, and he said repetition, repetition, repetition.
Yeah, yeah. You don't know where you're at until you actually perform for people, you know. You could look killer in the mirror or in the video, you know, but until you do it for some people.
Well, the two things you cannot practice are... timing and misdirection.
Yep, and communication and interacting with people, you know,
a lot of people are staying home just to do it in front of YouTube, in front of their camera.
Sure,
you know,
sure, yeah.
You need to get out and do it.
And then you notice that when you see them perform for the first time, you know, you can tell whether they've never done this for anybody.
They're looking at
their
hands or something.
Or somebody will say something that, you know, like, you know, you'll drop a card and the guy will say, oh, you know, that's how my wife, I saw a guy do this. And it really rang true. I thought it was funny because the guy drops a card and he was really nervous already, but he was stuck in, like you said, his head's down, he's looking at his cards, you know, he clearly only practiced at home. And the guy was making a joke and said, "Oh, that's how my wife shuffles." And the guy's like, "He just picked it up." He goes,
I'd
say, "Where do you think I learned it?" You know what I mean? You have to just be a human. When they say that means they like it. You know what I mean? So.
Sure.
But people don't get that. They get so stuck on their script and all this stuff.
That's what I was about to say, too. Some people have had it drummed in their heads that all of us are saying, you know, you should be scripting your acts. And so then they think, okay, well, I need to stick to that script and not go off script.
And that works great for a lot of people,
some and for some shows. But I think you have to be able to improvise as necessary.
Yeah,
because that shows the real side of you as opposed to you doing a show like a theater, you know.
Sure, yeah. And when I'm performing, I'd rather have a heavy, a good outline as opposed to a script.
There you go.
Know, because I think then you can go off and you can immediately go back to your where you know. I mean, you know what you're going to say, and for the most part, I said a lot of stuff that I always say for years now. But there are, you know, you can improvise and.
Well,
yeah, a script. If somebody says something, then you can't really go off on them and do a go off on a tangent as much as you can and get back to your script again if it's really a strict type of thing, you know. And so I can't do that. You know, I can't rely on timing of a script that has to go with the method. You know what I mean? I want to be have more freedom, you know. So
you kind of feel like that you have then, Chad, an outline in your mind of where you
sure.
want to go, but then
yep.
you're going to do it in a way, kind of jazz magic.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
wherever the audience takes you.
As well, I think that it's great to have like a show that's modular, you know, so that if you have to change, you know, mm-hmm. you can do it on the fly, you know,
yeah.
call an audible, you know, an audible. So yeah. to speak, on the, you know, and as opposed to where everything's linked together.
Well, you never know when you're doing a show. Sometimes you'll come on there and say, well, we're running a little bit late, and so
sure.
instead of your 45-minute show, can you cut that to 30? And then they come to you and say, can you cut that to 20?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You've got time for one trick.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah. And then if all you do is a FISMAC, that, you know,
yeah.
that, I mean, where it's, you know, I mean, everything yeah. is connected, it's going to be tough to do that,
right.
you know, so... And that, but that works for me, and it works for lots of people, you know.
It does.
I asked Williamson. I said, David, what are you going to do for your act? He goes, I don't have an act. You know, and have you seen David a million
sure.
times? And he doesn't. You know, not a set act, and he likes it that way. And that's what I strive to do now. You know, is like you said, just to have an outline.
Right.
You know. And to know what you're going to say pretty much for the tricks, and then be able to go off on tangents and have fun.
It's funny that you say exactly that same thing. I heard just this morning in an earlier podcast, which we'll hear, that was from Chris Carter. And Chris was saying that he does college shows, and that he has an outline also. He said, I have the script in my mind, and he said, I know what I'm going to be saying, but it's not actually written down as a script, but it's a script that's in my head, and I know what I'm going to say, and I've done it hundreds, if not thousands of times, and so it's going to work. I can go off script if necessary
sure.
and improvise as necessary, but I know that if certain things happen, I'm going to do this, and if they don't, I'm going to go, you know, do this. So
yeah.
it's scripted in his mind.
Yeah, well, that's smart. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what you're saying, you know, with the...
Yeah,
with
I mean, I could
so
personally do more of it. I agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
I really should, you know, I mean, you do yeah, you do need to write, and I know all the best guys, I think, really do. They write at least stuff down.
A few things.
Mm-hmm. A few things, some good lines, you know, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I need to do more of that, you know, because, you know, when I get up there, if you think you can just wing it, you might not go as well as you hope, you know, and it doesn't sometimes, you know,
yeah.
but that's about it, really.
All right, well, I was going to ask you, I'm going to get back, because I'm going to have Paul Vigil in just a few minutes
yep.
to give us his half hour or so, and that this is your first Mindvention, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
What do you think so far?
I love it. It's honestly one of my, it's a great convention, you know, I like it as much as some magic, if not more than a couple magic conventions. It's
yeah.
really fun, yeah. Yeah, I love it. I'll come back next year.
Since this is called The Magic Words, my podcast name, that what is your magic word? What is it that you live by? What's your philosophy of life? It could be a phrase. It doesn't have to be just a word. But what's your the magic word of Chad Long? What's important to you?
Friends. I mean, you
good.
Know, mainly. God, I really had something profound to say, but I forgot. Can I get back to you on that?
Well, that's a good one. Can I get back to
you? You know what? I mean, just... Yeah, friends, family,
mm-hmm.
sautéing spinach. That's about it, really. Yeah,
that sounds great.
Yeah,
good.
Thanks.
All right, that was Chad Long. Then here at the Mindvention, we're going to go into see what Paul Vigil has to say here then this afternoon. So for the magic word, right now, Scotty out.
Good.
Okay. So we just finished with Paul Vigil's little mini lecture, and we're soon going to be going in for Bob Cassidy's lecture, but I have a person who will be on the roast later tonight right here with me, a good friend, Doc Hilford. Hey, Doc, how's it going, man?
Good to see you, Scott.
Good to see you, buddy. And that I was delinquent in getting to wish you a congratulatory note because you came through last year just when you and John Stetson were passing through with your lovely wife. You just got married.
Lucia.
Yeah. And so then it's like I was going to turn around and say hello, and you were gone. I mean, you were there just for one show. So I'm back. I'm glad to meet her and say hello and congratulations.
Thank you.
There
thank you very much.
Now, was John involved, like your best man or something?
He was one of the best men.
Goodness, okay.
Because we had, how many did I have? I don't know. I had like four best men and she had like seven bridesmaids. It was a big wedding.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was a Caribbean wedding.
How fun. How fun. Did you have it in the Caribbean?
No, we had it at Miami Beach.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we're on the beach.
Kind of near home. Where
yeah, it was actually, the resort is right across the street from the condo where we live, because we live on the beach anyway.
That's convenient.
Yeah, it was really convenient.
Now, before the convention began, you had recorded a little message that was on the Mindvention website that was about a half-hour thing, so some great tips and ideas on how to enjoy the convention, and I had pointed to that and mentioned that some people should certainly see that. Lots of great advice, I think, that could be held for other conventions. Another thing, even for coming particularly to Vegas, I like when you said cash $100, take the dollar bills. I think it's important that you tip people and everything. You know, I think a lot of times magicians are not well known for being great tippers.
You know? Yeah. Right. I know. Isn't that sad?
Yeah, it is.
And we represent.
Yeah.
You know, not too many people. Some people will only meet one mentalist or one magician in their life.
Yeah.
And if we didn't show them a little bit more,
yeah,
we all suffer, right?
You know, I've heard some celebrities, and I'm talking about, you know, some people who are motion picture celebrities and that kind of thing, that there is an additional tax almost that they have to tip more because there's a certain expectation that they should tip like 25 or 30% or more.
Right.
Yeah, because otherwise they think, well, he's cheap. He's got a lot of money. He should be able to afford a bigger tip.
Exactly right. You know? And I'll tell you something else, Scott. My dad, you know, old school.
Yeah.
My dad ran into a celebrity. I think maybe I was 1 year old. And every time, today included, whenever he sees that celebrity on TV, he tells how rude that guy is.
To this day.
To this day. Because he came up to the fellow and said, "Hi, we're big fans." And the fellow said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm busy."
Yeah.
And that was it. And so for this, he's told everyone he's ever known, every time he sees that celebrity,
and
what,
just kind of brings that person's down in someone else's eyes.
Right. And all that celebrity needed to do, and he probably was busy.
Yeah, sure.
But all that celebrity needed to do is say, "Hi, how are you?" And it's like, I don't know if I mentioned it to the mastermind group, but when I sign an autograph, I just sign an autograph. But to kids, I put "to my friend, Billy."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they'll cherish that thing. You know, we need to do that. And tipping, even if it's just $1 more, you look at the tip and you go, okay, this is what I'd normally tip. Let me just tip $1 or $2 more. Just because I'm representing.
You know, I know whenever I'm performing like in a restaurant or something, and I know that there is a group of wait staff who is their night out. You know, it's like a hospitality night or something on Sunday night or whatever. They seem to tip more.
Oh, they
than
always
everyone else
do.
Because
in the trade.
In the trade.
Right.
We'll tip others in the trade.
Always.
Yeah, I think it's
always.
Kind of. You know,
the other thing is having had a lot of bartender friends where magicians were in the bars, the bartenders always told me, they go, "You know, we like you, you're our friend, but we hate those guys that come." Why? Because they're always hustling our tips.
Our tips, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if a guy, I learned this years ago, it said a magician would come up and someone buys a drink and we put their money, their change, on the bar.
Yeah.
And usually the drinkers in a bar, and this is a white collar, this isn't like, you know, not like a Texas saloon, man.
Okay, yeah.
You know, a white collar Bennigan's kind of, you know, after work kind of place. And they'll buy another drink. If they're not running a tab, they'll buy another drink and slide it forward. But the magician will see that cash and come over and go, "Hi, I want to see a trick.
Oh, man.
Let me do something."
Yeah.
So I always made it a point, you know, to wherever you work, show the staff more respect than even the guests.
Yeah, right.
Right. So now I work in a lot of resorts and things. Mm-hmm. I make sure I tip. I've got, you know, pesos on me.
Yeah.
Because I'm tipping. Right. Because I'm always in Mexico. I'm going to Mexico in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And I tip everybody I can everywhere.
Yeah. You were saying even the doorman or people wherever, you know, if they provide any kind of a service. Yeah.
And those people still go, "Oh, have you seen the mind reader? You got to go see the mind reader."
Yeah. So
now, I don't get paid more when the theater is full.
Sure.
But certainly the managers see the difference.
Yeah.
And it's an easier
show. There's a ripple
show.
Effect that you really don't understand what's going to be happening. It's further on out. Like you were talking about your dad in that story, that there may be far-reaching results of something that you do that may seem a minor thing right now. There's a huge thing on down the road. You know,
You may want to edit this part out, right? We're just in a big room filled with mentals.
Yeah.
And my wife and I leaned over and I said, "Somebody really needs a bath badly." And she goes, "Oh, so badly."
Yeah.
And we may go, "Hey, my style is, man, I'm in a t-shirt and jeans." That's okay.
Yeah.
But still, when you interact, you should make sure, you know. Di Vernon had some of the worst breath you ever came across.
You don't want to get too close.
You know, you didn't want to get too close. And smokers and drink. You know, you got to think like, hey, I'm I'm really going to be scrutinized. At least I think that, right?
Yeah.
You know, not only what you wear.
But how your hands look. You know, I've thought about that for a long time. You know, that you should have a manicure.
There's a manicure.
It's right. It should look nice. You know, look at your hands. And if you work with your hands, that's fine. But you should make sure whenever that you're performing, those are your actors. And like an actor on stage would have makeup, then you need to do something with your hands. You know, scrub it, use some lava soap or whatever, some pumice or, you know, in order to if you are a mechanic or whatever, to make sure that they're, you know, nice looking. Because the attention is on your hands if that's the kind of thing you're doing.
That's
if you're
a
medalist, you're still not, you know, using your hands because you're on stage or are further removed, but they're still seeing that. And don't think for a moment that they're not noticing those little things.
Every little thing, right?
That's
and
right.
We're different.
Just like shine
them.
Shoes, you know.
Shine shoes. And women, they notice all that.
Don't they? You know, that's amazing. You know, because they're big into shoes. And so I get a lot of compliments, you know, on I have been very selective in the shoes I wear on stage.
That's
and
right.
Another thing that I do is, and I got this idea from Tony Brook, or Tony Darkstone, so many years ago, and that is to take a magic marker and to color in like that on the sole, on the top half of that black, so this way that they're not seeing like the bottom when you're walking out, you know, as you're walking, it just looks like a new black sole.
Right.
As opposed to something that's been worn.
Yeah. You
know?
Absolutely should take care of your soles too.
Every little
thing. Well, it's like the back of the whiteboard.
Yeah.
You know, in mentalism, it's cardboard.
Yeah.
So I always either spray paint that black or put a piece of black. Not construction, poster
paper.
Board.
Yeah
or contact paper. Mm-hmm. But somehow, because now, granted, they're going to see the whiteboard mostly, but when you turn and write, it shouldn't look like cardboard. Now, there are exceptions.
Yeah.
When you're looking like you just want to do it, like Weber.
Yeah.
It's fine
it's
to cut
pizza
up.
Box. Yeah.
Weber's the one that can get away with it. But he's also got a lot of smooth style in the way he is.
Yeah.
So he can wear jeans and have a pizza box, and you still go, this guy's. You know, got a level of class.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, you know, it's, I was going to make the joke when Paul Viel said a lot of people walked out from his magic show when he was doing the Ouija board thing.
Yeah.
And my joke was, yeah, but you had a blue suit and you were showing a brown prop. You know, that was the only problem.
I can't say it doesn't matter.
But as magicians, we're never taught that. We're given feather flowers that are purple and green and orange and blue. It's like the Joker colors in everything. We do handkerchief tricks. It's every color. And women go, I hate magic.
Boxes painted in Chinese.
Right. And women hate it when if we had an actual... you know, designer that goes, look, there are three colors we need. We're going to...
You kind of hit a nail on the head over there. I hadn't thought about that. You know, whereas that there are more people, more magicians now and medalists who are starting to have directors, someone outside what you need to give you another perspective professionally. But if you also have a not only a choreographer, but perhaps some sort of a designer, someone who someone who works in a clothing store to say, you know, here's what looks a little bit better. You know, your tie, you know, could be a little bit better.
We used to have haberdashery.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Right, and now we don't have them anymore.
Right, right.
But the difference between shopping at Dillard's and shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue is there is somebody at Saks that'll say, have a pocket square that'll go with that.
When you go into to a hat store, you know, they will try to find a hat that matches your face and your head. You know, I mean, you're just not going to buy a ball cap. You know, you're going to buy something that fits for Doc Hilford. You know, this is going to be that is perfect. You know, like the hat, the Stetson that Lyndon Baines Johnson, the President Johnson, had worn.
Right.
That was a hat that was for him and that was perfect for
him. Right.
Had he worn something else, it wouldn't have been him. And others.
Yeah, he wouldn't look good in a Bull Rider hat.
Yeah.
And for the non-Texans, they don't understand it. There are several different styles of cowboy
hats. That's right. I wanted to go off on a different tangent. And one of the things that you had also talked about in the in your little podcast was places to go and things to see, you know, that you shouldn't necessarily be in. Because I was thinking, gosh, you know, I could be anywhere. I mean, I haven't had a chance to get out. I mean, I usually go to In-N-Out Burger. That's my number one place. But it's a little bit far to go from here. I have to take a cab or whatever around. But the point is you wanted to go and see somebody on the strip. And you said, well, there was one duo that I wouldn't necessarily recommend because they don't like mentalists.
Boy, they used to be so sweet. When they hated magicians, they were so nice.
Yeah.
Now that they...
The bad boys of magic. Yeah,
now that they are magic, they're just not nice to us anymore.
Why do you think that is? And why do you say that? I mean, have you read something, seen something? I think Paul Draper had said something he saw in a blog recently that Penn had said that magicians...
Oh, I didn't say any names.
Well, I'm just quoting Paul Draper. Paul had said that the Penn Jillette had posted something that mentalists should admit that they're using magic. And So again, I'm just quoting. So you can go on and talk about somebody else or whoever you want.
You know, what I'll say is, well, I've known him for 25 years, you mm-hmm. know, or about over 20 years, and they were sweethearts. Yeah. I've been Teller picked me up at the airport mm-hmm. and took me to the warehouse one year, and we just sat there and worked on things, and it was wonderful. And I gave him Q&A ideas, and we could talk openly.
Sure,
Ray Hyman. You know Ray,
right? Sure do.
And Ray was one of the scientists that investigated Geller at mm-hmm. Stanford mm-hmm. in the 70s. Ray, great friend. You can talk about cold readings and center tears without worrying. One of my best, as your friends, mm-hmm. one of my best friends is SS / Banachek, right? You never have to worry about Banachek trying to belittle you or demean you for any discussion about mentalism.
Right.
And he may have an opinion, but he still presents it like a man, you know, with an open mind.
Last evening, that was an exchange between Paul Vigil and Banachek. I thought was kind of
it was wonderful. Though,
it was.
Yeah? At the end, Steve says, I knew you were going to bring that up. And it was funny, and that's great.
It was, but they both had divergent opinions, and they held to those and would argue. And at the end, they're still friends and saying, okay, this is my opinion, and I appreciate your opinion.
In my mastermind group this morning asked Lukey, my wife. Lukey is about average. I said, what do you think about mentalists you don't know when you watch on? How much of what we portray do you think could be real? She goes, probably there's a 30% chance some of this stuff is real. Not anything in particular, but that there's a 30% chance of telepathy. It's not 50-50. It's probably more of a chance that it's not 2-1.
But the fact that there's some percentage at all.
Right. And then this is what she said, and this is great. She says, when a mentalist comes on and says, I'm real, I think it drops to about 0%. I think everything, that's what she said.
Oh, okay.
Everything looks, it's probably all going to be fake. But when they come on and go, this is all just fake, it raises it from 30% to about 50 in her mind. She goes, it mm-hmm. might be 50-50. And that's what
that's
I've done.
Interesting.
And she says, and when they don't say anything or say, you decide, I have no opinion. Mm-hmm. So she had none. But what I found is, years ago, I used to say, I'm not giving a disclaimer.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to disappoint anyone.
Right.
Now, I give a hard disclaimer at the beginning and laugh it off and make it a joke and belittle psychics and say I'm one of the phony psychics and all this. And at the end of the show, they line up to ask questions and buy horoscopes.
After I just told you
that. I've told them all that, but they've seen enough stuff
to make it wonder.
They don't care.
Yeah.
They want the experience and they have a good time. And I believe, what Lukey said, is I raise the probability to 50-50 that it could be real. Mm-hmm. By dismissing it all as, no, it's fact. And I've heard people in the front row say, he has to say that.
Yeah.
He has to say it's not real. And then that makes them believe it's more. I don't care if they believe it's real. I just want to be clean.
But for those who come out and might present this and saying this is going to be real for sure, then you have a long road to hoe because everything is all uphill from there because, okay, you know, Mr. Mentalist, I want you to prove it to me. Now, as I recall, John Riggs had written a book about creating a cult or cult following or
the
something.
The Messiah factor or principle.
And that was kind of the same thing. Where people actually, if you want it, I guess, could actually make people believe that you have these kinds of powers. And so you could start at a certain level and say, I am the master, and I'm going to show you why, you know, if you want to have that kind of power.
But the funny thing is those guys don't ever use the stuff we use.
Hmm.
They don't need to.
Yeah. You think they have charisma?
Yeah, I think it's almost all charisma. If you look into the real cults, you know, they're
like John Edwards or somebody. You think that he has charisma? I mean, he certainly created cults.
Yeah. And, well, I knew Williams. What's her first name? Now it's been 2 years since I've been in the spirit medium business. Lisa Williams, very well, you know. And Lisa's a sweetheart, and people liked her. And she believes what she's doing. I think John believes what he's doing, too, you know. So they're not really using what we're using. We're conscious that we're using a trick.
Yes.
I think they're tricking themselves
into believing that was something Banachek really told me years ago, that there are certain times in which that you can use, you know, the instruments that we know, and after a while, there's going to be a few times in which you actually start hitting, and you start hitting to a certain point, you're thinking, maybe I do have these powers. You can convince yourself.
Doc Nixon was around the turn of the 20th century.
Okay.
He believed that what he was doing with the mind reading part of his show was real. Because he would give a slate and a chalk to someone and have them write something simple down, and he would duplicate it with no gimmick. And what he was doing, we believe, is sound writing, sound reading. He was listening to the sound of the chalk, and his mind would just show him what he was hearing.
Could have been pencil reading or something, too?
Well, no. Because it was
blindfold?
It was just one person on stage was over on the far stage with a slate and a chalk.
I can kind of
And they would think
that,
something, like draw something, and if you hear, you know, it's a star, right.
Yeah.
And he didn't consciously think, I'm counting the things. He just stood there and said, I'm going to really do it.
Wow.
And his mind went, oh, it's a star. His mind filled in the blank.
Yeah.
So he believed he was doing that part of his magic show.
Hmm.
But he also put phosphorus under his tongue. He's crazy.
and he's dead.
Well, he's dead. If you read his little booklet, it's crazy.
Yeah. So you're going to be on tonight
on
the roast.
Yeah.
And so have you got a few things in mind?
Yeah, I'm going back to 1972 and doing all the absolutely filthy stuff that I could.
This is
going to
be great. This is going to be wonderful. Now, you're going to be going off, you told me last night, to Mexico for like 10 weeks?
Yeah, I've got 10 more weeks in Cancun and Puerto Vallarta. Well, a lot of the hotels along the Mayan Riviera.
Not just in one place. You're going to be traveling up and down the coast.
Right. It's six shows a week and six different hotels each week, so it repeats every week, and I do a number of weeks there, and then I go to Cancun, and it's three hotels, but I do two different shows.
Now, all the things that you have for sale, will you be available to send those out or in packages?
Oh, yeah. Almost everything now is the Dokinars, so it's like MP3s and MP4s.
So they kind of download those.
So they can download.
And now where can they go to find those?
Oh, thank you for asking at DocHilfordProducts.com.
That's with two C's.
That's right, DocHilford Products, PRODUCTS.com.
Right? There we go.
Thanks for asking that.
You're welcome. I think they'll thank you.
What did Stetson promote? What did he has nothing to sell.
I haven't talked with him yet.
No. No, yes, you did, because I saw a big blurb about that.
Conversation. We had dinner and had a very wonderful time, and I hope people, if they haven't listened to that podcast, go back and listen. Yeah, I mean, we went off in how many different directions.
You going to get Ross? Have you got Ross?
So I haven't.
Man, you got the best mentalist here.
We do. That's right. And I thank you very much. And let me ask you then, Doc. I don't know if I asked you this before. If I had, you can use the same word. And of course, my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word?
You know, I'm going to use the same magic word that I've had for a million years, which is fum-bubba-dow.
Fum-bubba-dow.
Fum-bubba-dow. And now I'll tell you where it comes from. This is
it sounds great, like voodoo or something.
I used to use it in the kids' show, right? Yeah. Fum-bubba-dow. When I was in the rock and roll business.
You know, you look like Jambi on...
Jambi. That's John Paragon.
Like a high, Mekahiney Ho.
That's it. I wish I had hands.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's Pee-wee, right. We used it in the rock and roll business, meaning, I guess I'll just say the word, you can bleep it, meaning bullshit.
Yeah.
So when we go, it was a whole bunch of fum-bubba-dow.
Okay.
And it was like a code word to be able to talk in front of people. What do you think about that? It's fum-bubba-dow. And it was kind of a code word. So I start using it in my kid's show to go like, the magic word is bullshit.
Yeah.
And but without saying that, so for me, I was laughing, going, it's all fum-bubba-dow.
That reminds me like of the old joke about the prisoners, you know, and that they had heard all the jokes in the book and such that they only had to just give a joke a number. They'd say, 324, and they'd all start laughing, and then one guy would stand up and they'd say, 226, and nobody laughed, and he said, that guy can't tell a joke. You know? That was Doc Hilford. This is Scott Wells at the Mindvention to get ready for Bob Cassidy. We got to go. Scotty out. Thank you, Doc. So, we've got Paul Draper here who is going to be, who was yesterday, the MC of the panel discussion. Did a great job on magic and mentalism. And did you feel like that there was something else that we didn't get to that you wish we would have we had the time?
Well, the part that I missed out on is we only had three members of the panel, myself, Paul V. Hill, and Joe Atmore. Mm-hmm. And all three of us agreed beforehand that we all use magic in our mentalism shows. Now, in a 90-minute show, I have three pieces of magic, right? Now, the core to me was that the magic is magic of the mind, or it appears as if the origin of how it is created is from the mind, or has some purpose and consistency within the context of my character and show, I wish there would have been someone on the panel who felt no, absolutely no magic and mentalism
right.
mixed. Michael Weber came later in the evening, and he felt strongly in his lecture, no magic and mentalism should, you know, they,
be
these,
mixed.
These should not be mixed. And it would have been nice to have had him on the panel. Yet, as I looked across the room, when I asked the members of the committee, right, of the audience, how many of you believe magic and mentalism should be mixed, it was about 90% to 10%. Only 10% of the room felt, no, you shouldn't mix magic in your mentalism. And I think that that is a drastic change from the days when it was no cards in mentalism and no comedy in mentalism.
Right.
So it was very different.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I thought it was good when we opened up to the Q&A then as well, and then we had a little interaction, you know, with some people having some strong opinions on one side or the other. And it is interesting that only about 10% of the people, because I didn't see back in the back of the room how many people actually had believed just that. It was only that it shouldn't be mixed, that it should be separate.
I thought that was very telling, too, that the individuals that felt that it shouldn't be mixed were almost exclusively sitting in the back rows or standing against the back wall of the room. And so it appears from a cultural perspective that the individuals here that don't believe you should include any magic in your mentalism, and as such are saying mentalism is not an entertainment but a proof of power,
yeah.
Those tend to be antisocial people sitting in the back of the room.
I thought it was interesting, too, and insightful, and something I'm going to remember, and that is whenever you're performing as a mentalist or even including mentalism in your show, that is to know what your powers are.
Right.
I think it's important that, you know, either you can do it all or you can't do it all. I was talking with someone this morning about can a young person, I was asking Chris Carter about this, if whether a young person can present himself, someone who's under 20 years old, of having powers as mentalists. As we were talking, we came to the conclusion that, yes, they can.
Sure.
Because it could be a power kind of like one of the X-Men or something.
Right.
You know, that
well,
I can,
ask Eric Dittleman.
It's a good point. Yeah, Eric's like 21
right.
or something, isn't it?
Had big success on America's
sure.
Got Talent
sure.
with that.
Sure, mentalism only. Yeah.
When I teach in my lectures, and I'm about to start another lecture tour on the East Coast now, is you need to know as a mentalist, what are your powers? Where do they come from? How do they work? Why are you showing them to an audience? Why should we as an audience care mm-hmm. about these powers? And how does showing your powers to us change you as a person? And how do you want us to be changed now that we've seen you? And I think that those are key components to answering those questions in everything that we do.
Yeah. And as far as the Mindvention goes, let me go back just to the
sure.
overall convention. This is the 10th year, and you've been coming almost every year, I guess.
Every year. There's only been 1 year I wasn't here, and that's because I had a series of 2 months of shows, and they put Mindvention in the middle of October, those jerks.
Yeah,
why would you stick Mindvention in the middle of the busiest month for all
mentalists.
Professional mentalists? And so now they've moved it back to November, and it's better. And yeah, I've been to everyone except that, and it's sure wonderful to see it from start to now. I mean, when these two men started this convention, they were running the very successful at the time Magic Invitational.
Mm-hmm.
But now the Magic Invitational, a close-up convention, has been cut away because Mindvention is the more popular, more successful one.
Yeah.
So we've seen a shift in the last decade from the popularity of close-up magic to the popularity of mentalism, and that's exciting.
Sure. Well, it has evolved that way. I remember many years ago when I was first started working with Banachek, and I had approached Joe Stevens. And this would have been about 1988-ish, I think, and saying that, you know, would you be interested in marketing some of Banachek's, the radio magic we've got then right now.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying, well, you know, mentalism is not very hot, you know. And
I bought a copy on audio tape.
Yeah, way back when. Yeah, that's right. But the point is there were so few people who were doing mentalism, and until now that it's gotten to be, you know, just super red hot.
Right.
Yeah.
No, when that came out, I bought radio magic on cassette tape. I remember listening to it in my little white four-door Nissan Stanza on my way to and from school. I mean, it was a great piece. And yes, I mean, at the time when I first learned spoon bending from Banachek,
mm-hmm.
nobody was doing it. There were less than 20 people anywhere doing it. And
yeah.
now spoon bending, as I often say, is the sponge balls of metalism.
Yeah.
Right? Between Banachek's work and Morgan Strebler and Guy Bavalli and Bavley and these other fellows, I mean, it's become ubiquitous to
right.
the art, symbolic of the art, even in the X-Men having one of them that
turns right.
spoons, right?
Yeah, so. That's right. You know, he and I were talking one time before about the Matrix, and remember that there was a lady who was in charge. She had, you know, little children that were kind of had different special powers and whatnot, and there was something that had happened whenever that when Neo had first walked in, and she said, don't worry about that, and he said, what are you talking about? When he turned around, he knocked over something and it broke, and she said, that.
Right.
You know. And Banachek and I were talking about that. He said, if I could just recreate something like that, so something that would happen, I mean, that would be kind of a good premise for a show, and a power that you would have, a premonition
right.
type of a thing, or clairvoyance, that before something happens in your show, that you can set up knowing that this is going to happen. So it's not really a prediction, but it's a premonition that I know that this is going to be happening. Just an idea.
Nicolas Cage did that in the movie Next.
Next, that's a good movie.
Where
he
knew the next thing that would be on the next television station,
mm-hmm.
and he just recanted off, and on the next station will be this, and then this, and then this, and
mm-hmm.
then kept flipping the channels and going through it. Sure. It just depends to clarify what your powers are. And my powers are clearly, I'm a mortal man who has great powers of observation and the ability to observe people and know things about them. I mean, that's my training as an anthropologist, as an actor, and in the world of metalism.
Yeah.
But for someone else, they may want to have powers of being able to predict the future. And do they predict the future 5 minutes ahead, a year ahead?
Yeah.
Do they see everything, just a picture, just a newspaper? What do they see as
yeah.
they do that?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Interesting. Well, thanks very much, Paul, and it's always good to see you. I'm glad that your tour was successful. We had a while
yeah.
back and everything then, too. And glad
yeah.
also you're going to be going up to the Northeast then, too, and your girlfriend
is Megan Tholen.
Oh, yes.
Hello, Megan. Standing
Hi.
Here as well. So you're going to be in charge of working with his schedule kind of up in the Northeast. So if people want to start booking him, they should contact you, Megan. How?
Right. So I'm available through my phone number, which is 435-668-8321, or with Paul Draper Management at gmail.com. And so I've booked several shows
mm-hmm.
starting from New York all the way down to Florida, so we have a lot of stops on the way already.
Starting when?
Starting February 3rd.
With Monday Night Magic.
With Monday Night Magic.
That's
right.
Right. Well, that's going to be a mentalism month, because you guys are going to be, or you'll be up there, I guess, lecturing, because I've got Mark Salem on a lecture tour
oh.
in February, too, you know, across the rest of the country. So,
well, you have the two bearded mentalist Jews.
The jolly Jews.
The jolly Jews going out for February teaching how to read minds.
How perfect. Well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate talking to you.
Great.
And
you.
So, Megan, Paul, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And so, from the Mindvention, Scotty out. Well, I'm in the dealer's room then right now, and there are lots of really cool things that people have got that are mentalism related. And Losander is here, of course, is all of the great magic conventions. So my question is, what is it that's with floating tables and everything else that this has to do with mentalism? The things you're selling here, most of the people are mentalists. What do you have to sell to mentalists?
Oh, pretty much everything I have, because you know what? It's very easy adaptable to mentalism. You can have, like, in the little box on top of the table, a prediction or whatever. And also, just working something with your power of your mind and levitate something fits very well in the realm of mentalism. For instance, my bubble effects, I say, you know, how mentalism really works is like you usually don't really read the mind, but you get the image or some kind of an image from somebody, if you were really doing this for real. So, of course, I practice very long to do it the opposite. In other words, I place my thoughts on top of an object and try to control the object. So the lightest object I could find is a soap bubble. So I make a soap bubble, and I say, I show you what I do. The soap bubble floats away. I say, stop. Soap bubble stops. I say, come back. And it comes back to me, flies, you know, all over the place, and then it pops at the end. So it's a wonderful way to make your mentalism work a little bit more visual.
Yeah, that's another demonstration of certain powers. You know, that's something they've been talking about, you know, at some of the panel discussions and everything over here, about how, trying to decide what are your powers,
yeah.
what can you do? And this is something else rather than having a prediction, which you could do, like you said, with the box that's going to be on top of the floating table, but having the power to move physical things
oh,
like
yeah.
the soap bubble that you couldn't think you're have command of the air as well as everything else. Yeah.
So I think the more you add on these kind of levels, like bending spoons or whatever,
right,
to make your mental powers more visual for the audience, so you don't have like a one-hour show with just thoughts, you know what I mean? I think it will help you to make your existing show better.
Right, right. Well, I think levitation, now the more I think about that, does lend itself, because that's something in which you are bending physical reality and the, well, I should say, the law of physics, things that you shouldn't be able to do. That would really be more in the realm of mentalism and not mind reading, but something that is, again, not magic as much as is mentalism. Good point.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
And so if people want to buy some of your products, they go, is it lowcenter.com, or where do they go?
Yeah, lowcenter.com. That's the best way to buy them.
There you go. Thanks very much. Dirk, good seeing you. Scotty out. Well, we just finished with Bob Cassidy's most excellent lecture, and the dealer's room was closed during that time because everybody was packed in there to hear what Bob had to say, along with Jeff. And afterwards, we're getting ready now to head out to dinner. And so I just ran into Lupe Nielsen. How are you doing, Lupe? Good to
I'm
see you.
I'm doing well.
And,
great to see you, Scott.
And you as well. It's always great. I mean, you've been traveling a lot. You just kind of flew in from L.A. from the conference, History of Magic.
What's
its exact title? It's called what?
Los Angeles Conference of Magic on Magic History.
On Magic History.
Yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about that, because I know they can see a lot of pictures on the Facebook page, but for those people who would like to hear maybe first-hand reports, you know, since this is going to be out tomorrow, how was it? What happened?
Well, actually, the Los Angeles Conference, this is the 13th conference
yep.
they've been having, and it is probably the hottest ticket in town.
It is. I have never been myself.
Yeah, because they hold it at a hotel called the Beverly Garland Hotel in Hollywood, and the ballroom is limited to 225 people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all the people that they invite.
Right.
So in order to get invited to that, people have to die off
yeah.
before the people in the waiting list.
On the waiting list can yeah. get on, yeah.
That's why I married Norm. That's the only way I could get into that convention.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is a lot of fun. It is probably, if I had to eliminate every convention I've ever gone to.
Really?
And
that would be it?
And leave one convention, that would be it.
Well, I often hear about really something that is really awesome, like a Johnny Gaughan or somebody presents, you know, or Mike Caveney and had the Million Dollar Mystery or whatever. There have been different kinds of things. What was it this year? What was really big?
Well, what this convention has that others do not have is that there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
And everything that we have now in the 21st century is based on the very, very old ideas. So the three featured illusions this year were the Carter Spirit Cabinet from 1909.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Caveney owns it and actually performed it on
wow.
stage for everybody. And Jim Stenmeyer, he's an expert on Jarrett,
mm-hmm.
and he presented what is called the Jarrett Sawing an Egg trick.
Sawing an egg?
An egg.
But it was a stage trick, I assume.
It was a stage trick, but what happens is that they have a small table, and then they put a woman on the table, and she is enclosed in an egg form. In other words, when she's on the table, there's no way for her to go into the base or to move because the table is too small.
It's like an embryo.
In an embryo position. Then they cover the egg with canvas,
mm-hmm.
with the canvas material, and then they saw her in half, and it's completely impossible. I bet it fooled everybody at the convention, so I bet everybody's going to go to their Jarrett book in order to find out how that was done. And the pièce de résistance was John Gaughan's Astarte illusion.
Yeah.
And that was invented in the 1880s, 1890s. And it was
that in Leroy's show?
Actually, it was in Chong Ning Su or William Robinson
yeah.
did it with Dot.
Mm-hmm.
And William Wood did it. And there was an engineer in the 1890s called Benjamin Keyes that made a few of those Astarte illusions. So it is a levitation. It is
mm-hmm.
done with full lighting. And the person that levitates, in this case it was Mestina, She is a regular performer at the Magic Castle. She levitated.
You say Miss Tina. It's not Miss Tina Leonard.
No.
It's M-Y-S-T.
M-Y-S-T-I-N-A. Miss Tina, she's Brian's, the stage manager at the Magic Castle's wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she can levitate vertically, horizontally. She can rotate 360 degrees vertically and horizontally. And even a hoop is passed around her to prove that there is no visible means of support.
Wow.
So it was a fuller, and it brought the house down.
Was that the one at the end of the show, the final?
That was the final illusion.
That
closed the show.
Wow, that was really great. Now, there are not many dealers, but you were a dealer. You brought some things, I guess.
Actually, we did not do any wheeling and dealing this time.
Okay.
Yeah, we drove in.
But I saw that you brought a table. I saw on Facebook that you brought one of the tables from Keller's.
That's
tell me about that.
I make myself. This was an idea of Eugene Burgers. Because, as you're familiar with the Taschen book?
Yep.
All right, the Taschen...
I got two of them.
Okay, they're like 16 pounds, 20 pounds each. And I saw Eugene Burger about 2 years ago, and he asked, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm learning how to make furniture. And he says, oh, I have the right project for you. You should make a table to hold the Taschen book. And you can see that table on the cover of the book, which is a Keller collage poster.
Right, with the Whispering Games on the shoulder.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a table on the cover of the book. So
right.
I made that table, and a lot of people are displaying their books on that table.
So, and it sells for $1,600, or what was it?
No, actually, $2,450.
$2,450, okay.
Yeah, $2,450.
Yep.
All handmade, solid African mahogany. So,
how many of these have you made?
I've made 12. I have two left.
Wow. Yeah. Yep. Awesome. And if people want to get hold of them, they can go to Nielsen.
They can go to the website.
Which is what?
nnmagic.com.
nnmagic.com. Makes it easy. In case you misspelled Nielsen. Nelson. Nelson, if I can say it.
Spell Nielsen.
Different way of spelling the name then.
Yeah.
So now that you're here at the Mindvention and trying to get a little bit of sleep in between, I'm sure running back home and catching everything.
Oh, yeah.
Have you enjoyed this so far?
I love it. I love the Mentalist. It's another vibe.
Yeah.
Completely different vibe. And I love all the electronic gizmos that I see in the dealer's room.
I think you had the line of the convention on your Facebook page of when you walked in, it was like going...
Radio Shack.
Going into Radio Shack. And then Tom Ladshaw had written back, why, they all wearing ties and short sleeve shirts?
actually, they're not that geeky, but...
The pocket protectors? Okay.
Yeah. No. I just was talking to this fellow from Denmark that has an impression pad at his dealer's booth, and it's like $1,600 for the impression pad.
Right.
All electronic.
Yeah, he was using that yesterday in their lecture, and talking about what you do with the parapad and everything. Yeah, some pretty cool stuff.
Very clever. Very clever.
Lupe, thank you very much.
Thank you so
Glad
much,
you had
Scott.
It. Okay, right. That's Lupe Nielsen. And for the Magic Word, Scotty out. I've got with me now Pete Poskaparta from Finland. Hey there, Pete. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. Now, you come almost every year, all the way to the U.S. for this.
Yeah.
And so it's the 10th year. You probably haven't missed very many of these.
Last year I was here, but it was at different dates. So
yes,
I had a...
you came the wrong time. Tell us that story.
Yeah, wrong time, but I have a nice time with my wife.
Your
here.
Wife was here.
Yeah.
Yes. So you got to see some of the shows and everything and spend more time with your wife.
Canyon and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd forgotten that he had changed the dates last year, and I think they did that again this year. For some reason, they couldn't get this hotel for the same month of what it was from before. But when you travel over, is this the only time that you come to the United States annually, just for this convention, or do you come for business? Or
I'm here quite often, actually. I was at the spring. I was in Seattle meeting Bob. We had a nice week together. We discussed about the mentalism, and he teach me.
Yeah,
and I was in Chicago in a PEA meeting in summer.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the this is basically I'm coming every year because the lineup is good, all the organizing and everything works here.
Yes,
so it's nice to be here a few days. The only problem is November is I have a lot of bookings in Finland.
Oh, do you? Yeah. November is a big month in Finland.
In Finland, yes.
Why is that?
Because we have little Christmas parties. Don't
before
ask me.
Before December. What?
Yeah, they come in. They all there are also December.
Yeah.
But it's a Finnish tradition of people going out and getting drunk, and companies will pay that, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
So the October is better for me, and that's why I'm only here about
October is
more
time for you to come here. You mean in November?
Yeah, October is better for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm here only 4 days this time.
Yeah, turn around and go right back.
Yes.
But you wouldn't really want to miss this because there's so much you learn here.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. I'm doing my own radio show in Finland. I'm looking for the new material, the radio, and I actually found something. And Michael Weber's lecture yesterday. That was wonderful.
Yes.
That was something that we could stop there and say, well, that's it this time. Well, Bob, his lecture was very
Cassidy,
good. Yeah, Bob Cassidy's again, but of course I have spent so much time with Bob that there wasn't nothing new for me, but anyway, it's always enjoying to listen to him. So.
Right. And the other thing that you got for the radio, you were showing me then yesterday, is from the German gentleman who were lecturing then yesterday, that was a neat idea, you know, using some cards, I think, or something. So they have
The pictures, yeah.
Yeah, pictures. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, I think that's kind of cool. Well, speaking of the radio, how long is your broadcast? Is it a weekly program, daily? What is it?
No. We are doing it. I'm doing it. There is always a theme behind it. So, in Halloween, I'm doing the Halloween special. Christmas, I'm doing Christmas special. Midsummer special. So there's always that theme.
Yeah.
And I'm always invite some Finnish celebrities in the studio, or people are calling in. There is a DJ. The host and a co-host, and me on studio.
Yeah.
So it takes about 2 hours, but there is a lot of music and everything else. So I'm not doing 2 hours in a row.
Yeah.
But that's about 2 hours with the guests. We are interviewing them and then doing maybe two or three, maybe four different routines.
And these people are calling in also from.
Yep. Some calling in. Yeah. Some sometimes it's a celebrity. It depends what kind of material I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as calling in of having the people who are just the listeners of calling in and doing an interactive trick with them, basically.
Yeah.
Kind of
that's what I'm doing also. Yeah. Yeah. And the problem is that I have done that now 5 years with 4 different stations. So I have to get new material all the time.
Right.
And that's why I'm when I'm looking at the lectures or whatever, I'm all the time looking at it such a way that I'm thinking, can I do this in a radio? And if I can, how I can do this in a radio?
Yes, right.
And nowadays it's very good that they are shooting all the things in the video too. Everything I'm doing on the radio, they're shooting on the video.
Okay.
Okay, we have some hundreds of thousands of listeners. Maybe 10,000 of them are watching the video. But if I can say that on the radio, that we have a video, that you can check that everything what I'm saying here is actually happened,
right,
like I say. So that's a very good thing nowadays.
Do they have that live streaming, or is that like a DVD they buy later or something?
It comes later, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But there is possibility also that we can put the live streaming if it's necessary.
I know that here locally that Rush Limbaugh has something on that you can subscribe to. That's the only one I know of like this, but I'm using him as an example, that he has a daily radio broadcast. And they just have a fixed camera, so that way you can see him if you want. He'll hold up a piece of paper or something, on there. So that is something that you could do as a streaming kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Radio is excellent media for mentalists and magicians. Your name pops up, people haven't seen you, they haven't seen your stuff, they have heard it, so they want to see it on stage.
Well, that leads to an interesting question, that whenever that you actually actually go and perform in some venues, and people have a perception of what you would look like based upon your voice. Do you find that people are surprised? I mean, they said that they were expecting somebody else, or it's like, you're exactly what I thought. What do they say?
Well, sometimes yes, but in Finland is so small country, and I have done so many TV shows there that most of the people also know what I'm looking like. But there are people who don't, and yes, they are surprising, and also surprising my name. Poski Parta means sideburns, and it's my real name, but everybody thinks it's a stage name, because it's very rare in Finland, too. And there was one guy who said that he always thought that it's some kind of fairy tale guy, that it's not exist.
Yeah.
Pete Poskiparta. That's not the real guy. So
where is Poskiparta?
Yeah.
This isn't him.
But that's very good for me on the radio, because they immediately remember my name when they hear the first time. Because
it's in the U.S., to have a catchy name of something is like Cher or Barbanacek or something.
Yes.
And people will remember that one name. So Poskiparta is something that they would remember.
Yes.
I see.
That's exactly yes. Yeah.
So you didn't choose your name. That was the name that was given to you.
Exactly.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is. Hey, exactly. Yeah.
Is Pete really the first name, or is it...
It's Petri. P-E-T-R-I. But nobody don't use that. Not even my mother.
Yeah.
They call me Pete in Finland, Pete in here.
Yeah.
And Russ Johnson actually renamed me. I'm working outside of Finland now. I'm using the name Peter Burnside.
It's Peter easier. Burnside.
Yeah, it's easier for you to pronounce.
Because they know what burns. Yeah. Sideburn, Burnside.
Yes.
So sideburn, Burnside. I like that.
Yeah.
So that's Ross Johnson's idea.
Yeah, that was Ross Johnson's idea. Yeah.
And so you speak tremendously good English, and better than some people here in the U.S. do, I believe, actually, too. But I understand that growing up, that is something that you guys learn in grade school. I mean, you learn English and what? French and German?
When you're going in the school, I think it's in the third grade you start in English.
Uh-huh.
You start practicing in English. And basically, in every school where you go, you start practicing English. And also, very good thing is that we don't dub the movies. When we watch the American movies, we have a subtitle. So if I want to see the Die Hard, I really hear Bruce Willis
talking in American English. Yeah.
Yes, and I see the subtitle. So I learn all the time.
In Finnish,
yes. And, but in the middle of Europe, they're dubbing the film, so they don't hear the English all the time. So that's why Scandinavian countries like Finland, Sweden, Norwegian, people speak quite good English, yes.
Yeah, good. Well, going back to the radio a minute, that I wanted to have you talk a little bit then about what you also do, is just a small part of your income as far as being a voiceover guy. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I was working in the radio, real working. I was back in 1997 or something like that, and I was doing is it radio advertising? You call it? Yes.
Yep.
And I was doing the voiceovers for those ads. And nowadays, about maybe 10% of my income comes from the voiceovers.
Yeah.
I'm doing the TV commercials and radio, and sometimes also some of my colleagues wants to hear my voice. Ladies and gentlemen, next performer. I'm doing those for my colleagues too, of course in Finnish.
Yes. Yeah. And you were talking also about when there's a horror film or something that was coming.
Yeah.
I Know What You Did Last Summer you were talking about.
I Know What You Did Last Summer. Yeah, they called me. Usually when there is a horror film, they call me because my voice is good for horror
films.
You
have a deep voice or something.
Yeah, deep voice. Yes. This is what you have been screaming for.
Do you say that in English since the movies are broadcast? You say in Finnish.
In Finnish.
What would you say in Finnish? How would it sound?
I Know What You Did Last Summer is in Finnish. Tiedän mitä teit viime kesänä.
Okay, now say that in your voice. How would you say that?
Do you want me to do it in Finnish?
Yeah, do it in Finnish.
Tiedän mitä teit viime kesänä. Nyt elokuvateattereissa.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got goosebumps. Wow. I don't want to see that. That's going to scare me. That's pretty cool. And then as far as the mentalism that you perform, what is your favorite type of thing that you do? I mean, there are a lot of mentalists who say do psychokinesis. Some don't do that at all.
Yeah.
Some are doing a lot of a series of predictions.
Yeah. I'm I'm a mind reader, yeah. So most of the stuff I'm doing is pure mind reading. I'm doing classics like
Q&A type of things.
Yeah, and four-dimensional telepathy and very straightforward. Think something, I know what you're thinking, or I influence your mind. I don't do any telekinesia, or I used to do it, but it's not.
It's not one of your powers.
Yeah, not my powers, not my persona.
Yeah,
that's what counts. And I'm also mixing some magic something sometimes on my show. But usually more when I'm doing a close up. I'm doing magic also, but I'm not doing close up so much. So.
Is there much close-up as far as restaurant magic work in Finland?
Not so much. It's more like corporate events, and they usually want me to do 1 hour close-up before the show or something like that.
And when you do that, are you doing magic or are you doing mentalism walk-around?
I'm doing both.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't see any problem for that.
So you do mix magic and mentalism, which has been one of the hot topics here.
Yeah, but on stage, I'm more like a mentalist. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. But when I'm doing close-up, I'm using magic also, and for me, that's not the problem.
And you use playing cards?
Yes, okay. I use playing cards. I always wonder who make those rules, but I don't follow those rules.
That's good. Yeah.
I make my own rules.
Yeah, pave your own path.
Yeah.
Kind of let other people follow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, are there a lot of mentalists or budding young magicians, or mentalists, I should say, then in Finland, or is that popular? I mean, like in Israel, after Uri Geller, hit the scene, seems like everybody was a mentalist over there. What about Finland?
Yeah, well, 10 years ago, I think I was the only one who used the title mentalist. Mm-hmm. Now we have one lady, Nora, who's very good. She's doing a good job. And then we have a couple younger guys who's doing also very clever mentalism. But most of the guys in Finland doing card tricks and card magic.
Yeah.
And we have extremely good card guys in Finland. Christian Engblom, Mika Pelkonen. They are very good. So I understand that, why there are so many guys who's specialized in card.
Well,
card
there again, see, there's usually some leader, and then everybody starts following. So I mentioned Uri Geller, and it's like people wanted them to be a mentalist. And I think if you have a lot of people or someone who is going to be like Christian Engblom, who is well known over here in the States as well, that has that kind of ability, or that you'll have other people saying, I want to be like him because he's successful, I'm going to learn this kind of stuff. So I can certainly see that. How large? What's the population of Finland, roughly?
Population is something like 5.3 million, I guess.
Okay, so small country. It's a fairly small country. I was going to say that Houston is about, I think if you take outside population, around 6 million people or so, around the county. And so you say it's a small country over there, so I'm just wondering about how many magicians and mentalists there were total, so it's not a lot.
Yeah, we have one bigger convention every year. It's called the Magic Days in Kouvola, and there is about 200 magicians.
Local, Finnish magician, yeah.
Yeah, so that's... That's the so-called active members, active magicians.
Sure.
But we also have a magic magazine called Joker.
Yes.
Jokeri. And there is, I guess, 500 or 600 people who's ordering that magazine. So I think that is...
Is that a weekly? Is that a monthly or bi-monthly?
Yeah, monthly, monthly.
Okay.
About, yeah.
Yeah. Is that also available, like, as a PDF or something that they can... Or is that just a...
No, it's
sort of hard copy.
Yeah, it's hard copy, yeah. Yeah, and it's in a Finnish language. And I think it's very important that we have that kind of magazine, because those younger guys, they have something where they can reach when they are coming in the magic community.
Sure, I was going to say, it seems like everything I would think would be in English, for the most part. So to have something that's going to be in their native tongue, it'd be much more accepted.
Yeah.
All right, well, to start to kind of wrap up over here, the name of my podcast, of course, The Magic Word. Let me ask you, what is your magic word or your philosophy or...
My magic philosophy.
Yeah. What do you live for? What is important to you in your life? What is your magic word?
Well, my family and my kids are important.
There you go, family.
Yeah.
Yeah, family.
They are. Yeah, I have two kids, 3 and 5, and a wife. A wife, and those are most important things for me, of course.
Good. That's great.
Yeah. Which but by then, my enthusiasm is magic and minimalism. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm using most of my time thinking these things. So watching magicians or reading books or writing stuff or something like that. So this is what I can't think life without magic or mystery or mentalism.
Yeah. That's a lot in one sentence, but that's important. Yeah, that's good. I was going to say, when you talk about family and having a couple of children, that one of the lines that Roy Zaltzman had shared was saying, okay, there are six letters in your father's name. And I says, no. He said, then he's not your father.
Yeah, that was very good.
Yeah. That was Pete Poscaparta. This is Scott Wells for The Magic Word. Scotty out. So we just finished the evening show after dinner with Cachetta, and we're going to be starting here about another 20 minutes or so with the roast for Bob Cassidy. And right now I thought we'd have a kind of a follow-up conversation from our previous one, I believe it was last year, with Eric Dittleman. Hi, Eric, how are you doing?
Hey, Scott, how's it going?
Absolutely excellent. Very good, good to see you, my friend. So during this past year, I think when I talked with you last on the podcast, you were talking about doing some America's Got Talent tour. You were kind of traveling around with them a little bit. How'd that go?
Yeah, actually, it never happened.
Really?
Yeah. No, that was a.
Did they sign a contract or something?
That was all kind of extra. I wasn't roped. It wasn't something I had to do after.
It was an option.
AGT, and they actually just focused on the Vegas show and some of the acts there, and didn't even do the tour at all. But this year, apparently, they're act together, and everyone's doing the tour from this past season.
From the past season, kind of late on.
Yeah,
that,
it's so. All right. It's all
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So, but they did do something here in town, and as I recall, well, I remember you would. You know, done something with Murray over the top, you know. Did you do some more stuff around town or here?
Not here, no. I've been traveling mostly all over the country, just performing a lot of colleges and corporate shows.
That's what I was going to say. Mostly a college shows, been doing a lot of stuff. I imagine they're a big hit with the college
campuses. Yeah, that's actually where my show was kind of designed anyway to start.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with that audience. I relate to them well. And my humor is really geared for them as well.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you're like you know, 1 year older than them.
A few years out. It's been a little bit.
You look like you're younger than him, actually.
Yeah.
So what's been some of the exciting things that have happened during this past year? Where have you gone? Where have you done?
The most exciting one was my Ellen appearance in April. So,
tell us about that how that came about and all.
That was a great time. I just, got a call from the producers. And
you didn't solicit it. They actually contacted you?
Yeah, they contacted me. I got to perform on my blindfold routine that I did on America's Got Talent. And divination of a name that I did. That Ellen, we actually had her think of a pet name, and I just got the name of the pet that she was thinking of, and it was a lot of fun. She was very nice. I mean, you only get to kind of talk with Ellen
on the show.
While the cameras are rolling.
Yeah,
right.
You don't have like a pre-show with her at all.
No, everything else is kind of, she wants to be separate so that she's surprised and reacting, honestly.
So with genuine reactions that she gets.
Exactly.
Yeah. And was she pretty well blown away?
Oh, yeah, she had a great time. She even said on the show that she wants to have me back, so we'll see if that happens.
Well, that was April, so it sounds like it's time to have you back.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll figure it out, see what happens.
Because I know she likes magicians. She's had so many other guys, you know. She's had Justin Willman and Sean Farquhar and some other guys, from time to time. So
it's really kind of that daytime spotlight for magic nowadays.
Yeah, that is the one who happens to like magicians.
Yeah.
Or any of the talk shows. Yeah. I mean, occasionally you'll see maybe on Jimmy Fallon or, Letterman or somebody that might be something, or Leno, but not too frequently. So, Ellen, it's great. And so you got to do that. Did you find that after that you had that notoriety, did you get to did you have more shows?
I mean, what I say is in my experience, it's really helped in the kind of the markets I've already been doing.
Yeah.
It opens doors into new markets, but you still kind of have to get your legs in those new markets and kind of still make a name for yourself, even though the publicity from the television spots definitely helps. So
well, I remember that Kevin James, I think we may have talked about this last time, that Kevin James had said that the reason he wanted to be on America's Got Talent was really to kind of put butts in the seats, basically, because sell tickets because he was at the Greek Island at the time, which is long since closed, but they had the World's Greatest Magic Show, and he was, his ultimate goal was, again, to try to sell tickets for that, you know, not necessarily to win the $1 million or whatever.
Right.
So what was your goal? What were you looking to do?
That was, I mean, it was similar for me. It was never about winning the whole thing. It was all about just getting footage at the time. I mean, before that, I was, you know, just made the leap into entertaining full time. So I just wanted to get my name out there, get a TV credit.
So I was happy.
Yeah, I was happy after the first episode aired. So everything else was just keeping it going as long as possible.
How many million viewers did you ever hear?
I think it was Nielsen's like were? 2 or 3 million an episode. So
per episode,
it is the most popular show in the summer. So you know, everyone tunes in. And
have they talked to you about coming back? I mean, I know sometimes that they have, like towards the end, they have some of the favorites from previous years who will come back. Have they talked to you and said, hey, we're going to have you come back?
Nothing I've heard heard yet, but you know, I wouldn't be opposed if that happened. I just would have to figure out what I'd need to do, because it is a tough format to get everything down into the 90 seconds that they need it for.
It was interesting to see Collins Key, you know, move as far as he did this year. I don't remember there being anybody else who had really gone that far. I think he went like a step further than you, didn't he?
I think there was someone maybe. So there was another magician in the finals, I think, one year. Wasn't Grasso? Maybe.
Oh,
I might
Grasso.
Michael Grasso?
Michael Grasso, yeah.
I think he came. I think he was eliminated and came back or something. Yeah. I don't remember exactly. But yeah, no, I was really impressed that, you know, a lot of respect that someone that young went all the way to the
finals. I was going to say, isn't he like 17 or something?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
he has a good look, and it was something I thought that they were kind of going for, you know, with that. Did you kind of feel that it was important that you had a good backstory also? I mean, like,
well, I actually tried to avoid any of that throughout the whole process because I knew I didn't have much of a backstory. It was it wasn't until my last appearance in the semifinals that they started like trying to pry something into. Yeah.
What has he got? What can we do? What can we do? You know, and I mentioned that because of a couple of reasons. One is that a friend of mine, Dan Dunn, who is one of these guys who does the picture, the giant picture, you know, like in 60 seconds or whatever, you know, and he works at basketball stadiums and halftime, that kind of a thing. He travels all over the world. He's out of Houston. He does a great job. But he tried out for AGT, and when he did, he was saying that they said, okay, well, tell us, is this going to be something that will really launch your career? And he said, well, I got a pretty good career. And he said, well, will it help you, you know, travel? He said, well, I don't really travel. I do a lot of these kinds of things. And say, well, will it, you know, help you this or that or whatever? And so, you know, it was basically he didn't have any backstory, you know. It's just he wanted to do this to get some notoriety.
Yeah, and it's almost, and it's almost like
he didn't move forward at all.
It's almost like going out for auditions too for anything. You know, you never know what the producers are looking for certain people to put them up on stage to begin with. So, you know, it's just it might have to be at the right time at the right moment, and that person
you were there, just given
that opportunity, and then all I can do is, you know, take advantage of it and rely on, you know, my talents to see what'll happen. And
how does this translate overseas? I mean, I know for an example that over in the UK, Penn and Teller Fool Us TV show has gotten some notoriety over here in the U.S. then as well, and so some people are able to travel, you know, over here because of the success there. My question is whether that Murray's Got Talent has done something for you internationally. Have you gotten some credit over there?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting because I could tell when it was airing in different countries because I get a new slew of emails or messages of new fans that are following me on Twitter or whatnot. And you know, they're seeing it for the first time, and the reactions have been pretty positive. And I know in a couple other countries they get, like, India's Got Talent and so forth, all the different varieties. And now Mentalists seem to be pretty popular, and people are reaching out to see what advice, you know, kind of help them throughout the process.
Well, which country seems to be more popular? What are you hearing? Which countries are you hearing from the most?
I don't know, really.
All of them.
It's kind of, just scattered throughout. So.
Yeah. Interesting. And so what are your plans? What are you going to be doing then for this coming year?
Just keep going. I just recently moved to New York, so I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I also have that comedy background, so I'm, you know, keeping that going and trying to infuse the both and just do what I love doing, which is perform and travel. And
you work in comedy clubs?
Every once in a while I'll do comedy clubs. Yeah, like I'll be at Foxwoods in December.
That's pretty
interesting. So that'll be fun. And just keep traveling.
Well, you know, you and I had corresponded just briefly over Facebook as well. We're talking about podcasts. I was talking about this one, The Magic Word, and you had suggested the Nerdist, or not Nerdist, it was the
Improv Nerd. Yeah, I'm a big improv nerd myself, so I'm taking classes at Upright Citizens Brigade in New York. I did a week-long immersion at Second City. So I've been doing improv almost my whole life and getting more and more serious about it. I incorporate a lot of it in my show. So it's great just to kind of hear the interviews of like people's strategy.
You kind of get to hear behind the scenes and what these guys are going through and hear some of their ideas. And so recommend that it's another podcast that is a little bit different, but something that you get to hear a different perspective that can apply also to magic. And
it's all about performing anyway. So if you're going to be on stage, you got to have that performance knowledge behind you.
And that's available through iTunes. Again, that's the Improv Nerd.
Yeah.
And what's the guy's
name? Jimmy Corain, I think, does that.
Yeah. And anything else you recommend?
A lot of audiobooks.
Well, you're on the road a lot, I guess.
Yeah,
so you just listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Have you heard Dan Brown's Inferno, by the way?
That's going to be, that's on my wish list.
Okay, I just listened to that. That is, I was traveling a lot here recently, and I put that in. It was like 18 hours, and I had to drive a lot. I drove a few extra miles just to listen to the end of that.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of biographies on just entertainers and autobiographies. Just finished the Jim Henson book, which is pretty fantastic.
Jim Henson book, that's interesting.
Oh, it was very good. I'm a big Muppet fan, so.
Well, do you collect some Muppets? Or
No. Just I think I just bought the DVDs for the Muppet Show.
Have you seen the one with Doug Henning?
I don't know. I haven't gotten through the disc
that one yet,
but I think I've seen clips of it online.
Yeah, pretty cool. Speaking of clips, I was going to say, is that how some people overseas have seen some of your clips, like on YouTube or whatever else?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the internet is huge these days just to, reach across the pond. I mean, I watched a lot of the UK stuff via YouTube, so I'm sure a lot of other countries saw what I did via YouTube. So
people who want to follow you, what is your Twitter and Facebook and all that?
At @edittleman or Facebook/edittleman for my fan page.
Edittel.
Yes, correct. ELMAN. And you can visit the website too, Eric Dittleman. But it doesn't matter how you spell that, it should go there.
Got to go. Okay.
Yeah.
Point to that.
Exactly.
Good. Eric, thanks very much. All right. Always good talking to you, my friend.
Good talking to you, Scott.
Okay. Thanks. Take care. That was Eric Dittleman. And from the Mindvention and the Magic Word, Scotty out.